from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. And coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, nearly 400 redevelopment agencies are set in effect to be eliminated through redistribution of their funding to state and local services by the 1st of October. And on Monday, a lawsuit to stop that from taking place was filed. We'll take up the issue in our first half hour. Then we turn our attention at 9:30 to a new report released just yesterday on the economy in Silicon Valley. Forum is next. We'll include your calls, emails, and your online questions and comments. After this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Two legislative bills which passed as part of the state's budget would take away some $1.7 billion in property taxes, which now goes to redevelopment. And on Monday, the California Redevelopment Association, the League of California Cities, and the cities of San Jose and Union City filed a lawsuit with the California State Supreme Court to bring secession to the elimination of redevelopment revenue through changing its distribution to redevelopment agency funding to state and local services. The suit seeks to block the slated change until the case is heard. And in this opening Forum half-hour segment, we want to focus on the lawsuit and what lies ahead for redevelopment. Joining us from Berkeley is Chris McKenzie. He's executive director of the League of California Cities, opposing Governor Brown's plan to cut community redevelopment agencies. Welcome, Chris McKenzie. Good morning.
Thank you, Michael. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Also good to have H.D. Palmer with us, Deputy Director for External Affairs for the California Department of Finance. And welcome, H.D. Palmer.
Glad to be back, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. And also glad to have our own John Myers, Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED-FM, who joins us from the state capitol. Welcome, John.
Good morning.
Good morning. And John, let me begin with you, if I may, because I think there's a good deal of confusion still about this, and I hope maybe we can sort it through. I found myself reading your blog and reminding myself that we don't really have specific language on how redevelopment agencies would be shut down. There are almost 400 of them, city and county. But what I guess the listeners may want to know here and why the cities are involved, and the fact is Oakland plays a preeminent role here, where Jerry Brown once presided as mayor. Oakland police officers, 17 specifically, a number of Oakland officials, including Mayor Kwan, half of her salary. So much is paid out of this redevelopment money. And Emeryville and Pittsburgh have payrolls, and the gang task force for San Jose. I mean, a lot of this is money that is now being distributed to cities. And what would happen to this money? How would this money change in terms of distribution?
You're right, Michael. I mean, I think redevelopment is somewhat complicated, and we've spent all year here in Sacramento talking about it because it was in the governor's budget to eliminate the agencies and take the money and move it in the first year to help the state budget's problems, and then in years to come for local services transferring some of the money away. And I think some of the confusion lies in the fact that redevelopment is used differently all across the state of California. There are 400-some redevelopment agencies. Most of them are aligned with cities. Some of the most prominent, San Jose, has had one for decades and has revamped much of its downtown as a result of redevelopment. And you're right, some of the other examples there, certainly Jerry Brown used it in Oakland when he was mayor. Redevelopment takes a portion of property tax dollars, and it takes the portion of property tax dollars that have grown once the improvements have been made. So if the area all of a sudden booms back and property taxes go up, that portion is accounted to the growth goes to redevelopment. And as you said, it is used in lots of different ways. Affordable housing is an important component. Revitalization of areas is important. But at the same time, there are stories around the state of redevelopment dollars going to attract sports stadiums and build them. As you said, they help fund the salaries of cities in some cases. And redevelopment has been criticized on a policy issue of eminent domain. And so, you know, you have this very large, complicated policy issue. And then you layer on top of that the state budget, where the governor's plan now, and which has been signed into law, says that come October 1st, redevelopment agencies essentially have a choice. They can go away. They will be abolished under the state budget. Or they can opt in to what the budget describes, and Mr. McKenzie will differ from this, as a voluntary program where they hand over $400 million a year combined to help solve local finance problems, and they would continue to exist. And the question is all of that legal based on the state constitution? And that's where we'll go to court.
Well, there's another big question, and H.D. Palmer, let me bring you into this, and that is no one seems to know how revenue transfer would be occurring or how it's going to take place. How are the eliminating agencies are going to work?
Well, the bill puts forth the provisions by which the agencies will either be wound down or will, as John noted in a very good summary of the issue, be allowed to continue with a payment to help school districts in their financing. And so by August the 1st, our staff is currently in the process of doing the calculations for how much each city and each county redevelopment agency would continue to provide for funding to meet the budget's goal of $1.7 billion. So by August the 1st, all of these redevelopment agencies will know how much, if they want to continue their operations, their parent, what will be their new parent company, whether it's the city or the county, will provide if they want to continue to operate.
And Chris McKenzie, the opposition, the lawsuit that was filed, has to do with constitutionality and also with Proposition 22. Is that right?
That's right. That's the principal basis for the lawsuit. Last November, the voters overwhelmingly approved a ballot measure, Proposition 22, which said, its purpose was to conclusively and completely prohibit state politicians in Sacramento from seizing and diverting these types of monies, as they just did in violation of that measure.
So no state raids on local funds is the way you're
interpreting it. That's correct, including very explicitly in the title and the summary of the ballot measure written by then-Attorney General Jerry Brown, it prohibits taking redevelopment funds even in times of fiscal crisis. He wrote that in there, and now he has been part of doing exactly what he says can't be done.
But I noticed John Myers, for example, Bob Blumenfeld, the assembly down in Sherman Oaks, Democrats, said they consulted with attorneys, and this is fully legal and constitutional.
Well, and the only way to resolve any legal fight, of course, is to take it to court and have a court make its own decision. And Chris McKenzie and the supporters of redevelopment have put this in front of the California Supreme Court, hoping, I think, to elevate the issue, expedite the issue, because, of course, October 1st is going to be here before you know it for these agencies. And we have had this discussion all year long. I should point out that from when Jerry Brown introduced a version of this in January to now, there were changes to how this money would be taken and how it would be used. There were offers and discussions from the redevelopment side of maybe some kind of alternative where money could be borrowed against redevelopment dollars, or it could be more money for a longer life of the redevelopment agency because they are supposed to expire after a few decades, and some have kept going. But there was never a compromise, never a political compromise found. And so what you got is you did get this. And again, I have to point out, when in a $26 billion deficit, which is what the state was facing in January, when lawmakers and the governor see or believe they see $1.7 billion out there, that becomes a very tantalizing thing to try to move forward. So, yeah, the legal issues have to be resolved soon.
Let me move this forward. This is a half-hour segment, so if you would like to join us with questions or comments, let me invite you to do that now. Our toll-free number is available to you, and you can join us by phone at 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. The time to call is now because, as I said, this is a half-hour segment, and we'd like to hear from you. If you have something you'd like to say or something you'd like to ask, you can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. And Chris McKenzie, if I can go back to you for a second, Stanislaus County officials have now joined in this. Is that right?
Well, we have a declaration in the lawsuit from the city of Modesto. I'm not aware of Stanislaus County joining in the suit.
So at this point, in terms of cities, we're talking just about Union City and San Jose.
Well, the league has the legal ability to act on behalf of all cities, and we represent 462 cities. The cities of San Jose and Union City joined in because they have very, very significant interests at stake, which are explained in the declarations of their representatives in the lawsuit. San Jose, of course, has been in terrible fiscal stress, having to lay off police officers and firefighters and many other employees. And the idea that their city general fund could absorb this, even if their redevelopment agency couldn't is completely debunked in the declaration and explained why that's completely infeasible.
Well, just some figures here. I think it's San Jose has about $12 million from redevelopment money going into pay for things like the Gang Prevention Task Force, which I mentioned earlier, and Mayor Chuck Reed said that would not survive. Pay officials, $12 million to be exact, and I think $14 million is the figure in Oakland. But H.D. Palmer, give us a sense of how, if you can, the commitments would be honored and what would be freed up as far as property taxes. I mean, how's the distribution going to take place?
Well, the distribution is going to be proportional to each entity's share of what the $1.7 billion would be that's assumed in the budget will be generated by these measures. Let me touch, if I could, Michael, for a second on the legality issue, because Proposition 22 is just brought up. In our view, Proposition 22 dealt with the very narrow issue of what the state can and cannot do with that increment of property tax that John talked about in his summary at the beginning. It did not address the broader, more fundamental and basic issue of the existence of redevelopment agencies. And they were first created by an act of the legislature back in 1945. It was the California Community Redevelopment Law. So in our view, redevelopment agencies were created by an act of the legislature, and similarly, they can be dissolved by an act of the legislature. And that is what this legislature voted to do when they adopted this two-bill package.
Again, if you'd like to join us, toll-free, 866-733-6786, or by email, forum@kqed.org. And we'll take our first call from Woodside. Gregory, join us. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to say this is exactly why I voted down the proposition to basically increase the vehicle licensing fees for the parks, is because I felt that the lawmakers would just, you know, tap into it whenever they needed to, and the money wouldn't be, you know, used for the intended purposes.
Want to comment, John Myers?
Well, I think what, you know, if I back up a bit to the macro thing that the caller kind of taps into here, which is this issue of what dollars are designated for, what the voters expect them to be used for, and also, too, what are tax dollars? I mean, are they specifically local dollars, state dollars? Are the services local and state? I mean, keep in mind that the way this was crafted in the state budget, I mean, these dollars do go help fund schools. They help fund services that people use on the local level. Of course, they are being used a different way on the local level, as the cities would point out now. And the difficulty becomes when there are too few dollars in the till, what is the priority and which way do you use it? And you know, the caller was worried about that particular version. And I think some people would say these dollars already have a designated need. Why are we moving them? And of course, as I've said before, the courts are going to be the ultimate arbiter of that.
Well, that's pretty much your argument, isn't it, Chris McKenzie?
It's absolutely the argument. In fact, we talk a lot in Sacramento about the importance of setting priorities. The voters are part of that process, and they said 8 months ago, that this money should be used to build affordable housing. It should be used for infrastructure improvements. It should not be used to benefit the state or any other jurisdiction. In fact, the ballot measure that they approved said it shall not be directly or indirectly transferred or diverted, language which Mr. Palmer and his colleagues tend to ignore. It is so clear this shouldn't be done, and the caller's cynicism is fueled exactly by the refusal of state officials to respect what the voters have said.
Now, what do you say to H.D. Palmer? We'll hear back from him in a moment when he says the legislature made it and the legislature can do what they want as a result.
Well, you know, the problem is no one appears to be reading the Constitution when they make those expansive statements. The measure addresses the funding, and what they've done is create a system for diverting the funds to pay for schools so the state's general fund can have $1.7 billion to spend on something else. They have directly violated the law, and this reminds me a lot of a schoolyard bully who doesn't want to be seen hitting another kid, but he gets a friend of his to go up and hit him and said, "I didn't have anything to do with it." They are absolutely violating the Constitution and acting with a straight face like they didn't. And we hope the court clarifies that and makes it abundantly clear so this pattern of lawbreaking that is occurring in Sacramento can come to an end.
Well, we're going to certainly have to wait for that decision to be rendered. But in the meantime, H.D. Palmer, when you hear that kind of indictment about violating the law and being a bully and so forth, you say what?
Well, you won't be surprised to understand, Michael, that we have a little bit of a different take on that. We have a situation where we are, as John noted in the beginning, having to close a $26 billion budget gap. And that requires the state to look at things that otherwise we would not look at. And the question, the fundamental question, and the governor talked about this back in January, is given the state's fiscal condition going forward, what should the state's role be in financing local economic development activities? And that's one of the issues that generated a number of proposals in the governor's budget, and arguably the most contentious and talked about was the issue of eliminating redevelopment agencies at a time when the state has been forced to cut back on a number of core services such as education, such as public safety. The question is, what are the most appropriate use of scarce state resources to finance what we believe to be the best, the most important priorities for the state? That's why the governor put this forward. That's why we've had the debate. And that's where the legislature ended up by saying we want to adopt a package that will eliminate redevelopment agencies but allow them to continue operation under certain circumstances. And so that was a policy statement by the legislature. Again, it is, John and Chris have said, this is going to be an issue that's going to be adjudicated by the courts. But we think we're on solid legal footing in the stance that we have taken.
Well, when you talk about public safety, you've got 17 police officers in Oakland who are being paid in redevelopment money. What happens to them?
Well, let's go back and talk about what the original intent of redevelopment was. It was to they were established to address blight. Now, there has been a lot of question about what the use of redevelopment dollars are for. The question is, one of the questions that people have raised is it appropriate to pay public workers' salaries out of redevelopment money? Does that constitute eliminating blight? So that's a legitimate question that's been out there in the debate that's happened since January.
And we'll bring more of your calls on. Anne from San Jose. Good morning. You're on.
Yes, I wanted to, guess to clarify. I didn't realize that salaries were paid out of redevelopment dollars, and I just wonder, how is that not a conflict of interest in some way? I mean, do people benefit if some certain redevelopment projects go through because their salary is tied to the project? Or?
Get you on record on this, John Myers. Like I said, half of Gene Kwan's salary is paid in redevelopment money.
Well, I actually would defer to Chris McKenzie to explain how redevelopment dollars are used by cities, but I will say that part of what you are seeing here is the way that tax dollars are spread out across the way government works, whether it's state government, and we're having this fight about whose dollars they are, or local government and the way those dollars have been used in the past. And I will point out, and I would again defer to Chris McKenzie, I would point out that redevelopment does not have any really big overarching legal restrictions. I mean, the state controller has pointed out in an audit recently that the way they calculate debt, the way they spend their money, the way they do their work, the fact that they borrow money over years and pay it back, not with public votes, it's all very different across the state. They are kind of a patchwork set there. And so how those dollars are used, I think, depends on the locality. But yeah, they are used in some ways that are different.
Well, since you've deferred to Chris McKenzie, let's defer to you here, Chris.
Thanks very much. As John said, there's a lot of variation. In many cities, rather than hire new staff, the city will use existing staff or the county, because there are about 15 county redevelopment agencies, to provide staff assistance to the redevelopment agency, which is often led by the same people who serve on the city council or the board of supervisors. So take Oakland, for example. The mayor and the council serve as the governing board of the redevelopment agency. About half the city of Oakland is in redevelopment, and they devote a very substantial portion of their time to overseeing those operations. Ironically, it was Governor Jerry Brown who, when he was mayor of Oakland, started the practice of using these funds to pay for council members' salaries and for police officers' salaries. These police officers, by the way, work in some of the most dangerous areas of Oakland. So it's 17 out of a force, I think, of about 700.
But there's also, Chris, $1.6 million to cover salaries of city council members in Oakland, too.
Yes, absolutely, who devote a substantial portion of their time to this. This isn't done in every city. It is done in some cities. You mentioned the gang task force work in San Jose. In West Sacramento, by the way, their investments between 1988 and 2009 in redevelopment has resulted in a 71% decline in property crimes and an 80% decline in violent crime, directly by eliminating blight. There's a direct correlation between these investments and reducing crime.
And again, Chris McKenzie is Executive Director of the League of California Cities, and Eric is joining us from Shasta Lake. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, yes. I think redevelopment should be abolished just for the general purpose of getting rid of a corporate welfare program. But I had a couple questions for Mr. McKenzie when it comes to legality. How does his organization and these redevelopment agencies get around the prohibitive aspects of giving away gifts of public funds? And also, from a standpoint of discrimination, how do you reward one company over another company by giving gifts of public funds? Wouldn't that lead to a discrimination type of an environment? And I thank you very much for answering my questions.
Okay, Chris McKenzie.
Sure. There's a general prohibition against gifts of public funds, but when redevelopment project area plans, which are formally adopted by the agency, often usually led by the city council or the board of supervisors, they lay out a series of public investments that are going to leverage private investments together, which will often increase the property values in those areas by a dramatic amount. We've seen recent news articles where in San Francisco this kind of result has occurred. And the revenue growth is shared with all of the local agencies, not just the city itself. So what the city does, or the redevelopment agency does, is invest public funds to create the foundation for private investment, and not all companies are willing to make that private investment. So it's a public-private partnership, which is being supported by many, many groups today, and that's how those decisions are made and those funds are allocated for companies that are willing to make a very, very substantial private investment and take that risk along with the city.
H.D. Palmer, I'm wondering, you've been in other gubernatorial administrations, but there's been repeated attention paid to the irony of Jerry Brown having been mayor of Oakland and using redevelopment funding that now is being essentially moved to a different place or part of a line item of the budget in his role as governor. Any thoughts on that for us?
Well, he'd be the first to tell you, and he said so publicly, that as mayor of Oakland, yes, he did utilize redevelopment. But as the chief executive of the state and looking at the entire state's needs, the entire state budget, the kind of budget gap that we have to close, and how do we prioritize what resources we have in a difficult fiscal environment, the governor made the choice to say we need to take another look at whether or not this is the right way for the state's role to be in financing local economic development. So he would be the first to tell you that as the mayor, he did in fact utilize redevelopment. But at the same time, as the chief executive of the state, given the state's fiscal situation, we have to look at a lot of things that heretofore we did not look at before, whether it is in redevelopment or whether it is in grant levels for social service programs or any number of other issues. The fiscal times demand that we take a look at a lot of things that heretofore we wouldn't have changed. But the status quo in the governor's view, given the current fiscal environment, couldn't continue.
So if you could just give us a sense, Chris McKenzie, before we have to bid you adieu, about where this is going in terms of the timeline, the lawsuit.
Sure. Well, we have asked the court to issue a stay of the implementation of the legislation by mid-August. This is all within the Supreme Court's discretion, whether they take the case, whether they issue the stay. There's a whole series of deadlines, which H.D. and John have referred to, where agencies and cities are going to have to decide whether they're going to take this Hobson's choice. That's why we've gone to the Supreme Court. We hope to get a decision from them very, very quickly, much faster than we would have if we had started in the Superior Court.
Well, we'll continue to follow this story. I want to thank Chris McKenzie, Executive Director of the League of California Cities, H.D. Palmer, Deputy Director for External Affairs for the California Department of Finance, and John Meyer, Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED Radio. When we return, we're going to take a different turn. We're going to talk about a new report out of Silicon Valley and the economy there and jobs.